I had a phone call, I think a day after I submitted this title to Rabbi Eisenberg, and it was one of those like semi-awkward phone calls, like, you know, we're friends and all, but the title you gave me for that lecture, I'm not sure that, like, I don't know if it really works, basically was the gist of the phone call, because this is supposed to be a lecture about the foundations of religious Zionism, and the title has to do with aspirations and values for our community. So the question was, well, what does one have to do with the other? So my hope is that by the time we're finished learning together tonight, we'll be able to answer that question. So we can not only placate our wonderful partners at the RZC, but also think about how the foundations of religious Zionism relate to the aspirations of our community. So let's take a moment before we start, as we begin, to close our eyes, so to speak, and our mind's eye, and envision an image of religious Zionism. If you had to pick an image in your mind, especially a photograph, or one of those, you know, those broadsides they used to print, the big ones for like this theater size broadsides, what would be an image, a photograph, that would strike you as an image of religious Zionism? Yeah, doctor.
An Israeli soldier with a yarmulke on his head, dominating at the kippah.
Okay, beautiful. Israeli soldier with a kippah.
Who's he over his shoulder?
With a gun. You can't have without the gun. You have the gun. What else would you have? Any other ones? And a lulav with a shofar. What other images? Classic image of religious Zionism. Yeah?
I would say a group of kids from Bnei Akiva in Israel or even in the United States. Very happy.
Okay, happy image. How many of you picture a black and white image in your mind? A nod? A photograph? A photograph, let's say, of a man wearing shorts and a thin t-shirt with a shovel. Many of us could picture that.
A Kova temple.
Maybe a Kova temple. My grandfather is featured in many of those pictures. That, I would say, to me, some of those images are the images that really typify religious Zionism and the religious Zionistic dream that has, Baruch Hashem, been flowering over 100 years now. So the challenge is that I think if you put the images of religious Zionism side by side with the motivation for religious Zionism, you have a little bit of a tension or a disconnect, you could say, because the primary motivation for religious Zionism, especially in the teachings of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, really is idealism. It has nothing to do with a gun or a shovel or a Kova temple. It's an ideal. It's a concept. And a lot of it in the Torah of Rav Cook revolves around the concept of Geula, which we could translate loosely as redemption. So it's an interesting challenge, because on the one hand, when you picture religious Zionism, you picture it in a very pragmatic frame. But when you think about it, you think about it in a much more idealistic, almost ethereal frame. And that poses a challenge to resolve those two, of course, but they pose a specific challenge for us in Chutz La'aretz. Because here we are, aspiring to be a religious Zionist community, and active members of a religious Zionist community, and yet each one of these poses a challenge. There's the practical element, the question that haunts us of, if we're really religious Zionists, so why are we living in the United States? Why does our zip code start with 60 and then something? And then there's the idealistic question of, what are the values that shape the life that I lead here in Chutz La'aretz? So those are two areas that we need to think about. But I think, actually, on the one hand, you could say that the first area, the pragmatic, the practical, is more challenging, because there are a lot of impediments, there are a lot of practical stumbling blocks that impede us from going on Aliyah and living that dream of religious Zionism. But I would argue that perhaps even more challenging, more difficult than the pragmatic side, actually, is the ideological side, is the spiritual value side. Because we can give answers, we can explain away decisions, practical, pragmatic decisions that we make. But the idealistic side of it, you know, where is that on our mattering map? So in a certain sense, it's a greater challenge. On the other hand, I would say in a certain sense, it's more attainable. Because on the pragmatic side, there are things that hold us back. There are legitimate reasons why we make certain decisions. So that's sometimes beyond our immediate grasp. But how we view life, what our hashkafas hachayim is, that's something that's very much attainable. What Dr. Pelkovitz would say, what's on our mattering map? What is significant to us? What's important to us? What becomes part of our conversation? How much is this part of religious Zionism, the idealism part of religious Zionism, part of our conversation, even if the practical side is not necessarily part of the everyday conversation? And that's what I'd like to focus on for a few minutes tonight. Realizing that these two concepts of religious Zionism exist, and even if we're not literally taking practical steps on one side, the other side, the idealism side of the equation, can and should be a big part of our identity. And it's something that we should think about, and that's what I want to do together tonight, is really think about what that means to us and what it should mean to us, what it can mean to us. So you could ask me, well, why is that significant? If I'm not doing anything about it, why is it significant to talk about it, to learn about it, to discuss it, to have conversations about it, to think about it? Why is that important? So I pose this question to a very big Talmud, you could say, of Rav Kook. His name is Rav Ari Shavat. Rav Ari Shavat is the director of the archives at Beit HaRav, which is a terrific place. Next time you're in Israel, if you have the zechus, the chance to be in Yerushalayim or HaKodesh, if you go down Yafo and you see Kikar Tzion on your right side, Rehov Rav Kook is on your left side. If you go a few steps up past the very new apartment building they just built, in a little courtyard, there is Beit HaRav, Rav Kook's original house, and the Beis Medrash is still there. It's amazing. And they have a beautiful exhibition there. You could see Rav Kook's personal study. You could see the Svarim. You could see exactly the way the Merkaz HaRav Beis Medrash looked, exactly the way it was when the Nazir of David Cohen was there, when Rav Arya Levin was there. You could see exactly the way it was. It's an amazing place. So the head of the archives there is a fellow by the name of Rav Ari Shavat. And I reached out to him to ask him, as I was preparing, what he thought about this question and why did he think, after all, he's an expert in the knowledge and the learning of Rav Kook, and I'm far from an expert in anything. I said, why do you think that this ideological, and especially focus on Geula, played such an important role in the thought of Rav Kook? And why do you think it might be a good idea to have a discussion about it in the context of religious Zionism? Why is it important for us? So he wrote me back a very long email, which was terrific. A very long email as to why he thought, and we'll share some of those ideas tonight. But I think even before Rav Kook, long before Rav Kook, we can identify where it all starts and why it is that Geula is so important. And why a conversation about Geula, which we'll see why that's part of religious Zionism in a minute, is essential. Because you could really boil it all down to one thing. We know that the Gemara tells us that in Maseches Makos, that Chavaka came and simplified all of Judaism. You know, it's too complicated. There are thousands of laws. So he said, you know what, let's boil it down to 613, the Gemara said. And then they said, you know, 613, that's a lot, 613. So they said 11, and then further until 3, and then they said, you know, we're going to put it down to one. One principle. V'tzadik be'emunaso yichya. The pasuk in Chavakuk. That's what life is all about. It's just tzadik, a righteous person should live with a sense of faithfulness. Well, emuna, that living with the godliness, the experience of Hashem Yisbarach in our lives on a regular basis, that's what life is all about. And what is an expression of Elokus more than Geula? Maybe we don't think about that. What is Geula? Geula is the process, you could say, of the story unfolding. Or as Rav Soloveitchik writes in an essay where he talks about Geula, the story moving from the perimeter to the center. It's a process that moves, and it's either moving to the end or moving to the middle, however you want to picture it in your mind. But we're moving somewhere. We're on a journey. We're in a process. Well, that process, as it unfolds, becomes a greater expression of Hashem Yisbarach. Because once it reaches its apex, the fulfillment, the zenith of Geula, then Hashem Yisbarach is manifest in the world. So think about it for a second. If we're not thinking about the process of Geula, then we're not really thinking about the expression of godliness in the world, which is what Geula is about. Ultimate Geula is Kamaim Layam Achasim. Everybody experiences God. So then if Geula is the unfolding of that process, isn't that Vitzarek Be'emunaso Yechya? Isn't that living a life that's suffused with the experience of Hashem all the time? So isn't that the most basic reason that we should really be thinking about Geula and the way that we see the hand of Hashem developing in history? I think it's pretty obvious. But it's not just, I would say, a basic tenet of our Yiddishkeit and a key component of how our makeup, our spiritual makeup should look. It's even a mitzvah. It's fascinating. You might not think so, but it is. If you look on the first page, if you look inside of your source packets, you have here the first mitzvah of all 613 biblical scripted mitzvahs from the Sefer Mitzvahs Katan. So this is the Rimi Kurvile, one of the important Balei HaTosafos, who was not unique among the Rishonim, who took it upon himself to enumerate for us what are the 613 mitzvahs, and then you have on the bottom the Smak Tzirik, which is a commentary, an explanation. So this important work, the Smak, Sefer Mitzvahs Katan, which is written, you know, in France, what year are we now? 2000? So it's about 800 years ago. He has the basic first mitzvah. What would you say is the first mitzvah in Chumash? Most fundamental basic mitzvah? Okay, but that doesn't appear in the Chumash, so where would it be? What would be the first mitzvah? If you had to pick any mitzvah of all the mitzvahs, what would be number one? Okay, you can only do bris milah if you think there's somebody who's commanding you about that. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, assuming that it's a mitzvah. That's a big debate. Let's assume Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah, so that's what he puts. Number one, Leida Sha'oso, Shabara Shemayim Aretz, Hu Levado, etc. So the first mitzvah on the books is the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. But look what the Smak writes. Because this mitzvah, he quotes, is Anochi Hashem Elokecha from the first of the 10 Dibros. And then, look where he puts the arrow on the side. It's on your page. He says, you know what is included in the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha? In this most fundamental mitzvah is the Gemara. The Gemara says, at the end of our days, we're going to be asked when we come to the Rabbona Shalolam, Shesholo l'adam la'achar misa ba'es dino tzipisa l'yeshua. One of the questions we're going to be asked when we get upstairs, they look at us, they're going to open our file, and they're going to ask, Tzipisa l'yeshua, did you look forward to this salvation? Says the Smak, V'heichan k'suva mitzvah zos. Where does it say to do that? I don't get it. It's going to be a question after 120 years. So tell me, open the Shulchan Aruch. Where does it say there's a mitzvah to anticipate the Geula? Where does it say it? Says the Smak, Shema Mina, it must be Bezet Toloi, that is included in the first mitzvah of all 613, the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem. How so? Shekeshem Sheyesh Lanu L'Ham and Chotzianu Mitzrayim, just like we need to believe the Emuna that Hashem took us out of Egypt. Shenem Anochi Hashem Elokecha V'chulei V'gomer, Kach Yesh Lanu L'Hamin Sheyotzianu V'Kabtzianu Mibin Agoyim. Included in the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzitzicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim is the mitzvah to believe that Hashem will redeem us in the future. It's all part of the same mitzvah. Essentially, if you believe in God without believing in Geula, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to believe in the full story, that God created the world, He took us out of Egypt, and He will take us back again. So if we don't think about this, we're missing the first mitzvah. We're not even at first base if we're not focusing in our lives on this ideal, on the ideal of Geula, which is at the heart of what a religious Zionist community is all about. So that's where it starts. It starts at Anochi Hashem. But Rav Kook, you know, wrote, if you turn the packet over, Rav Kook points out that it's not just, you know, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and then, well, let's put it on hold and we'll wait, it'll come at some point. Says Rav Kook, here in Chof Ches, Hageula nimsheches hi veholeches. The Geula, redemption, is a process that continues and goes. Geulas Mitzrayim, uGeulas Ha'aser Hashleima, hi pu'ula achas she'ena posekes. We saw in the Smak that it's in the same mitzvah. Says Rav Kook, it's part of the same continuum. It starts with Egypt, it ends La'aser Lavo. It's just one uninterrupted process. V'poeles es pe'uloseh b'chol ha'mesibos. And that energy of ge'ula, which exists uninterrupted in the world, has effects all around. Moshe ve'elio go'alim heim l'ge'ula achas. It's one ge'ula. Maybe you could tie this into a medrash, which we're not going to talk about tonight. When Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Ribono Shel Olam, when he's offered the job of being the Moshiach, the salvation agent, as she says, Hashem Yisbarach, do me a favor, send somebody else. Shlach, na b'yate shlach. The medrash says, you know who he was saying to send? Eliyahu HaNavi. And the Ribono Shel Olam says, no, now is not the time for Eliyahu HaNavi. He's going to come later. But the way that Rav Kook could touch this medrash is it's very powerful. You're right, Eliyahu HaNavi is not coming tomorrow. He's not going to be the Moshiach. You are. But you should just know that you're starting the process. He's going to finish it. You're just the beginning. He's the end. Says Rav Kook, it's all one. Hamaschil v'hagomer, haposeach v'hachusim. And we, the Jewish people, are listening carefully to the development of that process. Ad melo tzmichas keren ha-yeshua b'melo avetokva. So how could we not pay attention to this? It's such a big part of our lives. Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher tzisicha me'eretz Mitzrayim. That's why we have tons of mitzvahs. Every Shabbos and our tefillin and zeichel yitzias Mitzrayim. Every place right and left. Part and parcel of zeichel yitzias Mitzrayim, says Rav Kook, is zecher of the Geula Ha'asida. That's got to be part of what we're thinking about. We're not just remembering the historical events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's Moshe, but it's also Eliyahu HaNavi. It's one long, continuous process. But it's not just in some kind of ethereal level. Turn the page. Rav Kook, this is in Oros HaTshuva. Rav Kook explains that this process is happening and it's affecting all levels of life. You know, it's obvious to us, especially if we didn't believe in this, we would have a lot of tzaras today, that God runs the world. We believe especially in Hashgacha Kololos on a national level. Leiv Melachim B'yad Hashem. So whoever you vote for on a governmental level, who is we think is running the world, don't worry. Leiv Melachim B'yad Hashem. So Rav Kook explains that this is true, this idea that Geula and the process of redemption that started at Mitzrayim and ends L'asa Lavo, it actually exists on a practical level. See here, and this is Perek Dalet in Oros HaTshuva, in section Gimel, where the circle is. HaTshuva HaKlolis. Tshuva, which is the tikkun of the world, the fixing, the redemption. Shehi Eloi HaOlam V'tikuno. That is the elevation of the world and its fixing. But not just HaTshuva HaKlolis. V'HaTshuva HaPratis. And the specific return, the renewal of every individual, hanogas l'ishus hapratish al kolechad ve'echad, that relates to each one of us on the most particularistic level, ad kidei dakus hapratim shel tikuni ha'tshuva hamiyuchadim, until it reaches the specific practical aspects of tshuva, sheruach hakodesh yodeh lefartim lefratim hayoser bodedim, that only ruach hakodesh, the ruach hakodesh can identify them in their multitudes, in their individual little pieces, hein b'yachad Tochen Echad. They are together one spiritual entity. V'chein kol osim tikuni atarbus. And all, what is tarbut?
Culture.
All cultural achievements. The refinement of culture. Sha'al yadam ha'olam yotze mechubano. That the world emerges from destruction, from its primitive state. Sidrei ha'chayim ha'chevratiyim. Meaning, the social institutions of our world. V'ha-kal-kaliyim, finance, economics. Ha-holchim im u-mishtachlelim, that are becoming more and more sophisticated. L'ishtachlelim means to become more sophisticated. Im tikune kol chet va'avon mechamurim shebachamurim adikduke sofrim umidas chasidus ayurus muflogos. Kulam osim chativa achas. It's all interconnected, says Rav Kook. You can't say, well, yes, there is a big energy out there of tshuva, of tikkun, of geula, and that exists on some, I don't know, stratospheric level. But me and what's happening in the world, what's happening in society, what exists on an individual practical level, that's not connected. Says Rav Kook, it's all connected. We need to see ourselves on a practical level, says Rav Kook, as part of the movement of the much bigger process of tikkun, of geula, that's happening. So how can we not pay attention to this if we're part of the story? If the story is unfolding before our eyes because it started with Yetzias Mitzrayim and our ends at geula, and we're a piece of it, says Rav Kook, of course we have to pay attention. And the truth is, there's a little hook, there's a little secret that we have every day that is supposed to remind us of this process. It's supposed to be a little mattering map, little tick that says, oh, don't forget we're in the middle of a process. And what's that? It's our Shemona Esrei. Look how the Gemara identifies. If you turn the page, look at source number 4. Look how the Gemara identifies the Seder HaBrachos, the order of the Brachos in the Shemona Esrei. The first section in the underline of page 4 says the reason why we have the bracha of Geula in the seventh spot is because we are going to be redeemed. Mitoch she'asidim ligol b'shvius. Therefore they put it on the seventh. And the Gemara says, wait a minute. B'shisha kolos b'shiva melchamos b'motzei shvius ben David ba. The Gemara says, in the underline, in the middle size line, melchama nami aschalta de Geula. Anybody who wasn't sure if the term Askalta de Geula is a real term or was made up by somebody in the last 100 years, you should see it right here on black and white. The term Askalta de Geula is a very ancient term. It appears in the Gemara to explain to you that the process of Geula is just that. It's a process. It's an Askalta. It has a beginning, it has wars, and then it has a conclusion. So that's why it's in the seventh, to teach you that it's the culmination of this process of the sixth year and Motzoi Shvius Ben David Ba. But it's more than that. Because the Gemara goes on, if you see on the bottom, the Gemara wants to know, and the next underline, Kibbutz Golios La'achar Birchas Hashanim. So why do we have Tika B'Shofar in the ninth spot after Birchas Hashanim? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because Va'atam Hari Yisrael Anfachem Titenu Upirichem Tisu La'ami Yisrael Ki Karvu Lavo. Because what's going to happen in the process is first there's going to be an economic revolution. And there's going to be flowering of the desert. And there's going to be, you know, bug-free lettuce growing everywhere. I don't know. There's going to be an agricultural revolution in the land. So after the Birchas Hashanim, guess what's going to happen? People are going to come running. That's the next step in the process. So it's going to be Baruch Aleinu, and then Tika B'Shofar. They're going to be Mekabitz the Golios. And then the Gemara says in the next underline, V'kevan sh'niskabzu Golios nasu din Bereshayim. After we bring in the exiles, we all come back, then there's going to be an eradication of the evil. And after they get rid of V'kevan sh'nasu, I'm just going from underline to underline, for time's sake, v'kevan shenasa dim and harishayim kol haposhim. So after that, then all of the evildoers are going to be burnt away. And then after the evildoers are gone, v'kevan shenasa haposhim, kevan shekolu haposhim misromemes karen tzaddikim. Then the tzaddikim are going to be raised up. After the tzaddikim are raised up, heichan misromemes karenam, where are they elevated? Birushalayim. The next bracha, the cave of Shenivnes Yerushalayim, next page, Ben David, Ba David, so David HaMelech comes. The cave of Shabbat David, Ba Tefillah, because we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash is Beis Tefillah, Kar L'Chol Olamim. And then when we have a Beis HaMikdash, which is a Beis Tefillah, cave of Shabbat Tefillah, Ba Savoda. Wait a minute. So that means that the majority of our Shemona Esrei, the text of our Amida, is actually the story of the process of Geula. From the economic and the agricultural revolution all the way until the Binyan Beis HaMikdash with Seder HaAvoda in the Bracha of Ritzei. It's all one long process. It's not a switch. Either you're in Gullus or you're in Geula. It's a process of Geula that starts with the natural, in certain respects supernatural, but the flowering of the land, the Baruch Aleinu. We're davening, you know, in years when it's very dry in Israel, that's when we daven for special prayers for rain, because that's the beginning of the process. The flowering of the desert is the actual beginning, according to the Gemara. I'm not making it up. You see, that's how the Gemara structured the whole Shemona Esrei. You say it 3 times a day. So how could we not realize that we need to pay attention to the ideological, to the heart of the story of Geula? Now, Yes, this consciousness of the idealism, says Rav Kook, should also bring us to a practical resolution. Take a look on the next page. Rav Kook here writes a letter when he was still living in Boisk, in Tufresh Samach Beis. And he has very, very strong language here. Now remember, Rav Kook is writing this when he's still in Boisk. He hasn't even gone to Israel yet. But he's saying, listen, if we really want to see the revival of the Jewish people, if we're really focusing on Geula, and we've said we need to focus on Geula, it's part of the whole mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's part of understanding the development of Hashem Yisbarach's presence in the world. It's a story of our davening. To remind us, to come, take us back, says Rav Kook, who won't take a practical role in building the enterprise of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So here we go. This segue into the practical side of religious Zionism. Figure out what we need to do. Harbe shluch lamakom. He says every person needs to take themselves in hand and figure out, Bechira Chavshis, what can we do to practically go about building this dream, making it become a reality? So Rav Kook takes it to a very practical level. But it's true for us, even if it's not practical, it's the motivation. And that motivation, if we keep coming back to it, may someday, if it plants seeds, may have some practical ramifications. We're not going to take the time to go through. You see this open letter. It's about a page and a half. Says Rav Kook, we need to take these things to heart. But I would say, even if we're not there, that orientation can be crucial. I have a sefer that I lent to Maran Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Shlitei Shirav Refuah. So I lent it to Rav Schwartz because I knew he would love it. I was in Israel at some point, recent years, so I saw a sefer there of the relationship, the connections. There were quite a lot of overlap between the worlds of the Chavetz Chaim and the world and of Rav Kook. Rav Chavetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen of Radin, and Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, both Kohanim. So the book is called Bein Shnei Kohanim Gedolim. So when I saw this picture, this book, I'm like, oh, this is very interesting. Then I opened it up, and it has incredible history and pictures, and I knew that Rav Schwartz should love me well. I knew he would love it, because there's actually there, and there are a series of actual photographs from the Levaya of the Chavetz Chaim, where Rav Schwartz has some family members who were there, and you can actually see when they took the Chavetz Chaim out, on the stretcher is a set of Sfarim that he was taken out to be buried with. You see the picture with your own eyes. It's unbelievable. Schwartz is borrowing it, so I don't have it for you tonight.
Is that a minhag to bury somebody with Sfarim?
No.
I couldn't ask to put anything into it.
Yeah, so I don't know what they buried and what they didn't. I'm just telling you what I saw in the picture there. And it wasn't touched up.
But generally, you're not supposed to put anything in.
Yeah, I think you have to take that up with the chevra. I think they don't put anything in there. No, that's what I think. I've never been to inside a cemetery, so I can't tell you. But whatever they do, they do. Dr. Chavetz Chaim, if you want to talk about who was the embodiment of Tzipisa LeYeshua, of a focus on Geula, it was Bein Shnei Kohanim Gedolim. It was Rav Kook and the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim wrote a kuntris called Tzipisa LeYeshua. The Chavetz Chaim wrote Sfarim on Kachim because he says, look, we're gonna build a Beis HaMikdash soon, Atat, we're in the Ikvas of the Mashiach, and we're not going to know anything. And he writes a very long introduction to two of his sets of Sfarim about the importance of learning Kachim. So I'm sharing with you as we conclude tonight, I'm giving you the Sefer, the Hakdama of the Diary of the Nazir. The Nazir was a very unusual personality, Rav David HaKohen, as the appellation goes, being a Nazir means, if you ever saw a picture of him, he had extremely long hair, a very long beard. He had very, very, he took a Tanis Dibra on occasion, very, very austere practices. He was a Talmud Muvik of Rav Kook after they met in Switzerland. Rav Kook and the Nazir were both stuck in Europe during World War I, and they met a separate story, unbelievable story that the Nazir describes in his diary. So the Nazir had a son. He was a great tzaddik, a great Talmud Chacham, an unbelievable personality. He just passed away not long ago. Rav Shaar Yashiv Kohen. I forget how many months ago. He just passed away. So Rav Shaar Yashiv writes the introduction to his father's diary, which was published by somebody in Los Angeles. It's an amazing story. So in the diary, the Nazir describes his life, and he describes how he met Rav Kook, this whole unbelievable meeting, how he became his Talmud, etc. But on the way, he describes something amazing. He was on his way, he was in Berlin studying. Now he was from Russia, so when the war broke out, he was considered to be an enemy combatant of some kind. So he was put in a camp, and then ultimately people were able to get him out, and they got him a visa to get on a train to go to Switzerland, which was a neutral country. So I gave it to you in the piece here. You can read it. I'll just share it with you out loud. I put it in the packet because it's just an amazing thing to have. So he describes some of this in the diary, and Rav Shaar Yashiv Kohen develops this in the two pages that you have in front of you. So he describes the diary, how he went from Berlin to Switzerland. Great. But what preceded this is, how did the Nazir go to Berlin? What did he do? If you were going to go to Berlin, where would you go first? He says, of course, he would go to the Chafetz Chaim. So the Nazir went to the Chafetz Chaim first to get a bracha. And what did the Chafetz Chaim say to him? Chafetz Chaim says to him, you know, listen, we used to say the davening, V'hashi v'su avoda l'dvir be'secha, it was a tefillah. It was a dream. But today, V'hashi v'su avoda l'dvir be'secha, that's not just some pipe dream. It's atat, we're in the ikvus of the Mashiach. We're looking at Geula at the edge of our nose. When we say v'secha zena, it's almost going to be. And the Chafetz Chaim said to him, I might not see it, but you'll see it. And if you don't see the full Geula, he said to the Nazir, this young man, you'll see the beginning of it. So he says, here's the problem. There are going to be a lot of shilas, a lot of kashas. Who's going to know how to answer all these kashas? Who's learned Maseches Zvachim? Who's learned Menachos? So he says to the Nazir, he says, I'm a Kohen, and you're a Kohen. And your uncles were Kohanim. The Nazir and the Chafetz Chaim had some connections because the Chafetz Chaim knew a lot of the members, the rabbinic family members of the Nazir. He says, if we don't learn Kodshim, this abandoned section of Shas, who's going to learn it? Who's going to know how to answer the Shilas? So the Chafetz Chaim says to him, promise me that every day you're going to learn one blot of Kodshim. You're going to go to Berlin, you're going to study, but every day you have to learn at least one daf every day of Kodshim. That's not like the easy Masechtas and Daf Yomi. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a serious commitment. And the Nazir says, okay, I'm on it. So the Nazir arrives in Basel, which was the first stop of his train. But he has no money. He has no connections. He has no place to go. So where would a Yid go if he's lost in a foreign country? Shul. So he goes to the shul. So he goes to the shul and he waits there. And the rabbi of the shul in Basel, who he describes, they have this Rabbi Arthur Cohn, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who is the rav of the shul in Basel. He meets him and he says, Shalom Aleichem before Mincha Maariv, whatever. So he says, what are you doing here? So he tells him, he says, I'm a refugee. I'm a yeshiva boy. I was studying in the university. Now I have no place to go. So he says, don't worry. Stay in the shul, daven maariv, and we have a siyum tonight. So at least you'll have a place to eat supper. And then after supper, we'll figure out what we're going to do, how we're going to set you up. So we have a siyum for the Sudas Mitzvah. What's the Sudas Mitzvah Siyum on? Maseches Menachos. The shul is making a Siyum on Menachos. So says the Nazir, he's sitting at the table, and the Rav of the community looks at him in front of the whole Olam at the Siyum, and he says, look, we have here a Rav who's a young rabbi, he's a yeshiva bacher, he's a university student, and we'd like to be mechabed him to say a shtikl Torah for our siyum and our shul lekavod maseches menachos. Says the Nazir, at that moment, I saw the image, he says, in his mind's eye, so to speak. He says he was blessed by the Chavetz Chaim. Because he stood up and he delivered a whole drasha on the sugya of Kodshim, what he describes here on the back page. He speaks in perfect German, which he got in his university days from Freiburg. He talked about a whole hadron on the last mishnah, fourth line down from the top, on the last mishnah menachos, echad amarbid ve'echad amamid uvavad shechav aliva leshamayim. And his main thesis was a mishnah in the middle of Zvachim about l'shem shisha dvarim hazevach nizbach, the kavana that you offer when you offer a zevach. And the people were mamish blown away. A yeshiva bachar, a university student off the cuff, knocks them out of the park with a whole drush on Seder Kachim. No one, who's learning menachos? And he says, it was all thanks to the Chavetz Chaim. They set him up and they took care of him. This was the mofes of the Chavetz Chaim, he says. They called him, in German, they called him David Kagan, because he was a Kohen. And he says, this was the beginning of my introduction, the Hakdama, to the next step on the journey, which was when he met Rav Kook. Because it was Bein Shnei Kohanim Gedolim. And it was all the Masa HaGdolah. It was all the great mission of what? Of the Geula. And the Chavetz Chaim is like, how could you not? How could you not learn Kachim? If you're a Kohen, you're a Rav, your family are Rabbanim, you're going to ask you Shilas. And what shaped that? On the one hand, you could say it was a pragmatic decision to learn Kachim rather than, I don't know, Mishneh Berurah. The Chavetz Chaim didn't say learn Mishneh Berurah every day. Although he went around Europe selling Mishneh Berurahs. He didn't tell him to learn it. He said learn Kachim. Why? Because the way he lived his life, the pragmatic side, was influenced by the vision of the Geula. So for us, we may have pragmatic decisions to make, and even if they don't mean Aliyah today or tomorrow, if we strengthen that idealistic side of the picture, the focus on Geula, of that expression of Elokus in the world, which is the conceptual underpinning of what a religious Zionist community is all about, if we strengthen those values and aspirations in different ways, they can also play out on a practical level. Kol echad echad l'fi madrigaso, every person according to where they are. But I think in that respect, we really need to make sure that we have, as a community, as individuals, we have our values, our priorities, our aspirations in line with the great vision of Rav Kook, of the Chavetz Chaim, of the builders of our community of religious Zionism. And hopefully in doing so, we will not just plot a course forward, but we will also be faithful to the foundations of religious Zionism. Thank you very much for coming. Yeah. Shukran.